Hey, welcome to Stop the Presses here at the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. And it is the 28th of October, 2020. Coming to you live today, your host, Mark Anderson. And I have a return guest today from Alberta, Canada, a social credit economics expert and all-around good analyst of all things economic, Wallace Klink. How you doing, Wallace?
I'm doing badly, Mark. I'm very pleased to be on your show.
Yeah. Sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, through the Australian League of Rice, run by Arnie Lukes, Wallace and I and Wallace's brother Robert appear on video programs discussing economics and the politics of the day. So you can check that out. Dial up the Australian League of Rice and you'll see video shows involving Wallace and his brother Robert, and then sometimes I'm in there too, as well as others. Some very good information there, written and spoken. Oliver Haydorn, a social credit economics expert and author, is also on there. This, of course, is not to be confused with Chinese social credit in any way, shape, or form, nor is it UBI, and we'll talk about those distinctions most likely today. Wallace, there's sort of a twofold reason I wanted to have you on the show today. There's an important book that I found in my belongings. It's been buried. I have maybe too many books. I'm told that all the time. But there's a very interesting one, not really widely known necessarily, and it's called The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, subtitle, An Examination of Epistemic Autocracy from the 19th to the 21st century. And what's fascinating about this book is it shows primarily, or at least chiefly, the corruption of science. A big problem we have today, in my opinion, Wallace, is that...
I don't hear you.
You don't hear me?
No, I do.
Oh, you hear me now?
I hear you.
Oh, okay. How long did I cut out?
You cut out. You were just in the middle of a sentence and you cut out.
Oh, okay. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. I'm going to ask the producer, how am I doing?
Mm-hmm, sure.
She says she heard me all the way through. It might have been on your end, Wallace, maybe your earpiece. But anyway, to retrace my steps just a little, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, one of the chief parts about this book is that it shows the corruption of science. Right now, during COVID-19, we're being told by the powers that be that whatever might be the case, whatever arguments there may be out there, that science is infallible, that science, including medical science, cannot be wrong, that it's empirical, and that the science we have today is to be believed, whether it's COVID or many other subjects. And so we might argue about certain details regarding this crackdown, stemming from COVID. We may have all these things to debate about, but we must believe the science. Therefore, we must obey the slowdown and in some cases, the shutdown of the economy. But what this book shows, and the title of it indicates, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, is that science is highly corruptible, and we know it's very corrupted. Look at the climate change arguments. Look at all these things that involve very debatable science, and we're told these are all settled matters. You can't argue about climate science because it's settled. You can't argue about COVID because it's settled. Well, in fact, science is just not corruptible. It's been highly corrupted. And it's become kind of a cult unto itself. That's what's interesting about this book. And that kind of thing has been reflected in the novels and the nonfiction writings of H.G. Wells, George Orwell, Huxley, and other futurists and dystopians that talked about science no longer being impartial, no longer being incorruptible, and in fact being a cult and a highly corrupted one at that. And I think that's the reality we're facing, Wallace, and it bleeds into economics and the banking elite, in my opinion, and I think there's plenty of evidence to back this up. The banking elite is largely responsible for the corruption of science and medicine and certainly of media. And that's got us in a straitjacket economically, in a straitjacket culturally, in a straitjacket intellectually. And we are seeing institutions long trusted that are really in a state of almost total failure. We have to depend more and more on ourselves to discern the truth, because our leaders and our institutions just won't uphold inquiries into the truth or the truth itself. In fact, the truth is feared. The truth is considered almost heresy, while heresy is considered truth. And I wish I were exaggerating. Your thoughts, Wallace?
Well, you're not exaggerating at all, Mark. The problem is this is old age problem of power. People seeking power over others, rather than seeking to help others and to enhance their understanding, their knowledge. People try to take advantage of other people. And that is largely in the modern world because of the financial system that we live in, which causes a shortage of purchasing power and causes us to run to the banks for relief, and they will create money to make up the shortfall of income that the industry has by accountancy conventions to actually cause. And so therefore we're forced to live more and more on tomorrow by mortgaging tomorrow. But you see, the costs of production are all met today as production takes place. It's just simply a matter of energy working out upon materials. And if these things were not available, we wouldn't have any results. We get the results, but we can't access them until we go to the banks and mortgage our futures in order to have permission. Tickets to live, if you want, the banker's credit. And so that everything is out of step. And we are forced into a position of extreme anxiety, insecurity, and so on. And this, of course, contributes enormously to sharp practice and desperate attempts to survive in a world where survival for all is not possible. And it just leads to a general degradation of the intellectual and ethical quality of the society. And we are suffering severely from the results. Douglas said, Major Douglas, who originated social credit, said back in about 1917, in his The Delusion of Superproduction, he explained how the system works, and it cannot function without further production. And the problem is, it's not just an incremental thing. It's multiple. It's something that multiplies rapidly, so that we get in a position where we have to produce more and more and more and more and more in order to generate credits in an attempt, a futile attempt, to settle the debts that we've incurred in order to access the fruits of our endeavors.
Let me kind of get that in other words thing in there. In other words, we have to basically kill ourselves producing more and more and more and mortgage our futures just to purchase what's already been produced. Sure. In current and recent cycles. We're on a treadmill. The treadmill doesn't get any slower. The incline doesn't get any steeper, continues to get steeper, Mm-hmm. So it doesn't slow down. It continues to get steeper. We have to produce more and more and mortgage our futures and keep borrowing from the banks at interest, a very punitive interest in many cases, just to purchase what's made in the present. And even Winston Churchill admitted this, and Major Clifford Hugh Douglas, the Scottish engineer that discovered and kind of promulgated economic democracy, aka social credit, again, a complete far cry and totally different thing than what's going on in China. Listeners live and in the archive need to understand that what we're talking about now is a major economic remedy to our financial and related problems. But at any rate, it's a form of slavery, arguably, because we have to do all sorts of unnecessary toil and excess production simply to get the incoming credits, not just to pay our debts as we go borrowing, unnecessarily and needlessly borrowing, but then just to go to the store and purchase what's been produced. So this runs everybody ragged and keeps us in a perpetual state of anxiety and fear. And I think it makes us vulnerable to political charlatans then, who can exploit this milieu, this atmosphere, and tell us all sorts of tall tales about fearsome viruses and fearsome this and fearsome that. And then we are more easily conned because we're always wondering where that next slice of bread is going to come from. Your thoughts?
Exactly. Yes, that's true, Mark. People are, after all, dependent upon the resources at hand in order for their survival, not just their prosperity and happiness, but their very survival. And if people can get control of those resources through a monopoly of credit, which the banks are, they're a monopoly of financial credit. Credit should be widely available according to natural resources and our capacity to produce. But it's kept short on the part of the banks because they seek to make their commodity, which they consider credit, which they lend, scarce. You enhance the value of your commodity if you can get a corner on it and make a scarcity of it. Then people will pay an abnormal price in various ways for access to that. And that we are in that kind of a position. We're held to ransom in the midst of plenty.
That's a great way of putting it. We're held to ransom in the midst of plenty by the debt merchants that can only make good money on their debt if it's intentionally and strategically kept artificially scarce. And we have to honor their conditions to get that credit. Meanwhile, our governments, which could supply that credit through the proper democratic mechanisms properly and carefully put together and create currency interest-free, instead of not doing that, instead of, jettisoning that responsibility, instead of abdicating that responsibility, thereby putting us at the mercy of the banks, and then our governments themselves are at the mercy of the banks. That's where it's doubly tragic.
Well, of course, we are forced more and more to make demands upon government in order to survive. And, of course, governments go more and more into debt in order to do that. And that has been done with regard to so-called relief to people who have been displaced by the this alleged virus that with which we're supposed to be besieged. So it's, you know, I think people are very much influenced by these arguments about inflation. Any expansion of money is inflationary. They don't understand how the system works. Money, the system is simply accountancy. And what we do in production is we produce goods and services, and in the process we produce costs, and we have to recover those costs from who else but the consumer. The consumer is the last resort for us through his purchases. And then these credits, when the consumer spends the money, go back through the business. The business pays off its loan with its bank, its production loan. And then the process is started all over again. Of course, it's going on continuously and overlapping, but that's basically the nature of it. We create costs. We have to liquidate costs by recovering them from the consuming public, consumption being the end. Are you there?
Yeah. Yes.
Something happened. But anyway, the problem is not inflation. It is inflation, the way we operate the economy, because we only issue money as debt. And that means that all money is issued to create a cost. But money, if costs are being generated more rapidly than incomes, then obviously you have to have some mechanism of compensating for this disequilibrium. Now, the problem is we have an iron rule that people must earn their living.
Now, yeah.
Can you hear me okay? Something is interfering a bit, but anyway.
Interference here. But I want to interject, Wallace, that therefore the purchaser, the consumer, who's kind of at the end of the chain in the whole economic endeavor, must have sufficient purchasing power. And the paradox is that in the age of automation and AI and robotics, human labor as a factor of production is inevitably and probably irrevocably being reduced. So what's the answer if you have less need for human labor in the production system and yet people need income? Well, clearly and really unavoidably, that income has to come from some non-labor source, because you can't add labor to that if labor's being phased out or at least minimized through automation, unless you create a bunch of silly make work jobs making some sort of useless widgets, and that's nothing but a form of slavery and wage slavery. You'd never be paid enough by that widget production anyway, so why spend 8 hours a day making widgets? And so this is the great paradox, the way we've been kind of backed into a corner by this system. We got about 3 minutes before the break. I see we have a caller. We'll have to take that after the break. But at any rate, it's a real paradox, and it's a form of slavery and really, really kind of an extortion, you know, to make society work harder than it has to just to have its daily bread. I'm not saying all work is bad. It doesn't mean that labor is inherently bad. All it means is excess or redundant labor is not necessary. That's all it means.
Precisely.
It's people, like you say, they hear, well, maybe we need more money in the system. They automatically think that a loaf of bread is going to cost $1 million, you know, that the money will just automatically lose its value. That is not true.
No, and you see, the tyrant regards work as a means of disciplining people, of establishing moral rectitude. It's not that. Production is simply a neutral thing that people do in order to achieve a given end. And there's no basis for this puritanical effort to try and enforce work upon people to make them, honorable people. In fact, it's dishonorable if you do things that are not genuinely useful. It's a dishonor to society, to yourself, and to God, if you believe in God. It's because it's a perversion of activity. And as you say, Mark, it is absolutely an instrument of tyranny, of slavery.
Sure, sure. If you have a system that's obviously slavery, it's just a guy points a gun at you and says, dig that hole. But if you have a system that doesn't point a gun at you, but makes you work in redundant systems where the labor is arbitrary and it's way beyond the pale of what society requires, and there could be a much better way of doing things, and it's just a bunch of make work or bureaucracies growing out of control in government, then that's the same kind of coercion, but without the gun.
It's anti-cultural, anti-spiritual, anti-human. It is absolutely uncivilized. It is the central tenet of both communism, fascism, and the existing financial system.
And we'll be right.
Smile, such platonic eye, how they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls, how we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening live virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love, It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile Oxy Silver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Nikki, great product. Have to try it for a few months to see results. After taking Extendovite for about 6 months, I have noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from carpal tunnel. I will continue to buy the product. Ken Peaks, 5 out of 5 stars. Works as advertised. This formula is very powerful. Be careful to follow directions. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized and my lower edema has reduced. Lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. Thank you. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
And welcome back to Stop the Presses here on the 28th of October, 2020. And my guest is Wallace Klink, a social credit economics expert and longtime, speaker on that and writer and analyst of that school of thought from Alberta, Canada. And I do have a caller. I think I can take one at least today. Charles from Florida, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hey, Charles. How's it going?
I'd like to add this to your talk about social credit. I in the 1960s here, and I live in St. Petersburg, Florida. In Tampa, Florida, I knew a professor of Tampa University, Carlos Wyman. He was originally Colombian from Colombia, South America, and he taught. He was a graduate of Harvard University, and he knew John Kennedy. John Kennedy was a graduate of Harvard too.
And oh wow!
He had persuaded John Kennedy, according to him, that behind Kennedy's greenback ideas that were very much like the Lincoln greenbacks. That he was going to have a what we would call today an infrastructure bank. It would loan out non-interest-bearing money, would repair bridges and roads and so on. It would be kind of like the WPA was in the 1930s that Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, was associated with. He and Roosevelt were, together in the liquor business and had worked together in the New Deal originally. I think Joe Kennedy kind of turned against Franklin Roosevelt and some of his warmongering, but the idea was kind of a new WPA, but it would work with non-interest-bearing money, kind of like a Lincoln greenback, and that's where Kennedy's problems, among other things, with the system developed, you know, with the CIA was going to pull us out of Vietnam and
interesting.
You know, to break up the CIA.
How Wyman's last name was spelled? Was it W-Y-M-A-N or something?
Yeah, W-Y-M-A-N, a German name, Carlos Wyman.
Harvard.
He was a teacher at the Tampa University, and he used to use Eustace Mullins, the Federal Reserve conspiracy, as a textbook in his classes. So I'm told.
Whoa. Well, you could never get away with that today.
Oh, no. The Tampa University was considered almost a Birch Society university. One of my Jesuit friends is deceased now, the Jesuit brother Don Callahan, he used to teach at Tampa University, and he said they were considered almost like Birch Society members, Tampa. They were so right-wing. I was a member of Birch Society at one time myself.
So interesting. Appreciate that, Charles. Wallace, any comments? We got a couple minutes before the break. This is a short segment before the bottom of the hour. Any comments, Wallace?
You have to be very careful about counterfeit versions of social credit. Social credit is concentrating on the consumption side of the economy, not the production side. We do say this for certain: all things possible must be financially possible. In other words, all new production must be financed by new credits. But the problem is consumption. The consumers must be equipped to liquidate the costs that are produced, which are in excess of the incomes that they have. And that causes us to get engaged in all sorts of extra capital products, but maybe to engage in their production in a wasteful manner just for creating jobs and that sort of thing. In other words, it's a waste society we have. Our problem is not in production. We have demonstrated our capacity to produce phenomenally. Our problem is in consumption. And we've tried to solve it by going into debt, by mortgaging our futures. You don't liquidate costs by borrowing and going into debt in order to meet them. All you do is transfer them as a further burden on the future in doing that. We need credits that actually liquidate costs. And so that these debt credits that the banks create do go back, and they do liquidate the costs when they're used to pay the original bank loans off. But the problem is, it's not a solution to the problem. It simply doesn't do anything to resolve the fundamental deficiency of the price system, the way it works from an accountancy standpoint. We need credits coming in that will indeed cancel old debts, but in canceling them, we don't want to leave a new trail of debt. We want them to be finally. You see, if you look at things without getting into money, money is just a mechanism that has been invented or evolved by mankind. There is no reason at all to assume that we have done it properly, and we haven't. So we have to have a situation where we can replace the credits that the banks dishonestly have alleged to have filled for us with more debt.
Paul Charles, we got the break at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Yep.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Yeah, from the little big horn to the Rio Grande, it seems we've seen the last lemonade stand. Well, all the flea markets and the paper routes, if you can't trade in bulk, you get muscled out.
And returning to the big show here, the 28th of October, 2020, your host, Mark Anderson. Don't forget, I still have copies of the great book, Alice and the Money Tree, a great little hardback, one for 10, two for 15, three for 20. And it's written by a good friend of mine, John Briggs from Hastings, UK. And it tells in rhyme and verse with Alice in Wonderland style illustrations, the way we're being conned by the money masters. You can get a hold of me through the station to order or email me direct, truthhound2@yahoo.com. Alice and the Money Tree, great for homeschoolers and many others. At any rate, Wallace, I want to announce too to the audience, and I don't want to forget this. I should have said something in the first segment. Mm-hmm. I do have a audio of about a 4 or 5 minute Parliament floor speech from Ontario MPP Randy Hillier there in Ontario, Canada, and he's speaking out in his own populist fashion against the COVID crackdown, the COVID tyranny. And we're going to get to that in a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to want to hear that. You're going to want to hang around. It's very interesting. We need to pay a little closer attention to what's going on to our neighbor to the north in Canada. And Randy has some very interesting things to say regarding rumors. Maybe rumors is too weak of a word, but allegations, claims, reports that Justin Trudeau, who I think is literally out of his head, of course, he's the Prime Minister of Canada from the far liberal side of the ledger. And the word is that he's looking at bringing a kind of scientific cultural tyranny upon Canada and possibly greatly limiting the movements of the average Canadian. This has been kind of circulating around. Of course, we have to be a little careful. There's speculation involved. So in a few minutes, we'll hear Randy Hillier's take on an important aspect of that. And you're going to want to hear that. But Wallace, before we get to that, I want to just share a little something in a very important book I found in my collection, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship by Philip Darrow Collins and his brother Paul David Collins. The subtitle, An Examination of Epistemic Autocracy from the 19th to the 21st Century. And it talks a lot about how science can easily become just another religion, another ideology, basically a cult-like movement that dresses itself up in the garb of objective science. And of course, when science is weaponized, just like when media is weaponized, just like when money is weaponized, we live in tyranny. And so far, you and I, Wallace, have talked about the weaponization of credit and the monopolization of credit and what that does to society. And we know that that lays the groundwork. Before you can corrupt science, before you can corrupt the media, you got to corner the market on credit. And I think that's a fair statement. But here's a little something of this book I just mentioned, and it quotes Orwell. And this is very interesting. I don't want it to be too long, but here, I'll start here. The primary aim of modern warfare is to use up the products of the machine without raising the general standard of living. From the moment when the machine first made its appearance, it was clear to all thinking people that the need for human drudgery and therefore to a great extent for human inequality had disappeared. If the machine were used deliberately for that end, then hunger, overwork, dirt, illiteracy, and disease could be eliminated within a few generations. But it was also clear that an all-around increase in wealth threatened the destruction, and indeed some cases was the destruction, of a hierarchical society. In a world in which everyone worked short hours, had enough to eat, lived in a home with a bathroom and a refrigerator, and possessed a motor car or even an airplane, the most obvious, perhaps the most important form of inequality, as Orwell called it, would have disappeared. If it once became general, then wealth would confer no distinction. Such a society could not long remain stable. For if leisure and security were enjoyed by all alike, then the great mass of human beings who are normally stupefied by poverty would become literate and would learn to think for themselves. And once they had done this, they would sooner or later realize that the privileged minority that runs the monopoly of credit had no function, and they would sweep it away. In the long run, this hierarchical society, which is based on that monopoly of credit, I'm adding that, was only possible on a basis of contrived poverty and ignorance. And then it goes on to say, Wallace, the essential act of war is destruction, not necessarily of human lives, but of the products of human labor. War is a way of shattering to pieces or pouring into the stratosphere or sinking into the sea materials which might otherwise be used to make the masses too comfortable and hence, in the long run, a little too intelligent for the powers that be. Pretty interesting stuff. Your thoughts?
Well, it's pretty obvious what the powers that be, what the attitude of the powers that be is toward their fellow man. Nothing but contempt. And that is not a very civilized, certainly not a Christian way of looking at things. It's not even basically, even moderately civilized. It's brutal. It's uncivilized. It's savage. You know, we don't live in a potential or a necessary state of scarcity. This is a contrived situation. And it is that situation that drives people to covet what others have and makes hostility amongst people. You will not have that kind of thing when you have just a normalized situation where people have access to the regular needs of living. And we can provide that many times over with modern technology. They were saying, I think in the States, some people who were opposed to going to war said that they couldn't afford a war. Well, they not only afforded the war, managed to expend all the energy necessary to destroy a good part of Europe, but they came out of the war with a greatly expanded industrial capacity. It shows you the complete blinders that people live on in terms of scarcity. The scarcity is a specter that hovers above them and terrifies them, because they don't realize the real credit that is available to them. It has been sabotaged, and the media, of course, has been no help at all, because it has gone right along with this financial policy of monopoly and world control. You don't see the media opposing these things, because media is concentric with finance and subservient to finance. And unfortunately, they are the ones who have had a monopoly also on the area of public opinion. And so we've had a financial system supported by a media system, which has prevented people from even beginning to understand the nature, gigantic, the colossal nature of the fraud that has been perpetrated against them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and as you indicated, we're chronically short of money everywhere. Until there's some manifest destiny kind of all for one and one for all specter of fear hanging over us, and that is some mm-hmm. foreign enemy in the case of war or COVID-19. And right. all of a sudden, there's just endless supplies of money.
You declare war, and money, as has been said, flows like water. Although just previous to that, it had been so scarce that people were on the breadline.
Yeah, or on the brink of it. And more and more people, in fact, most people don't realize, even people that are relatively wealthy, many of whom are far more in debt than poor people. That's one of the paradoxes, is when you see someone with a huge house and huge cars and everything looks great, a lot of times their debts are so great compared to their assets that they're scarcely better off than a person who looks to be almost poverty stricken but has no debt.
And well, so, they don't live by the normal severe constraints that most people have to put up with, and so therefore they're not inhibited about spending with abandon.
Right, in a debt-based money system. Yeah, it's very interesting. I'll go on to add one more part that Orwell wrote as quoted in this book to round out mm-hmm. our discussion, and then we're going to get to that audio of the MPP from Ontario, Canada, Randy Hillier, mm-hmm. Challenging the COVID part of this great scam, which scams us monetarily and which scams us informationally through the media and so on. Orwell also wrote, and a lot of people haven't heard much about Orwell writing these things. We're more familiar with 1984 and Animal Farm. These are some of his lesser known writings. Anyway, it adds, in practice, the needs of the population are always underestimated, with the result that there is a chronic shortage of half the necessities of life. But this is looked upon by the powers that be as an advantage. It is deliberate policy to keep even the favored groups, even the more favored groups, you know, the almost rich, people like that, somewhat near the brink of hardship, because a general state of scarcity, and as you say, Wallace, the scarcity is completely artificial, that mm-hmm. general state of scarcity increases the importance of small privileges and thus magnifies the distinction between one group and another. The social atmosphere is that of a besieged city, where the possession of even a lump of horse flesh makes the difference between wealth and poverty. And at the same time, the consequences of being at war and therefore in danger makes the handing over of all power to a small caste seem like a natural, unavoidable condition of survival. And we see that we hand over our power and our rights to a small caste, C-A-S-T-E, caste, due to the fear of COVID, due to fear of foreign enemies, much of which, if not all of which, is contrived fear. There's actually very little, if anything, to fear. So Orwell was quite prescient here. In other words, even the almost wealthy in the middle class, it's kind of in the back of their mind that there's this, you know, this hardship, this state of uncertainty that's always kind of grinding away at everybody.
Yes, well, of course, it is the old ploy of the external enemy. If you can provide people sufficient evidence or pseudo-evidence that there is an external enemy, that especially, presenting an imminent danger, then you can readily mobilize people's thoughts and their efforts and their resources in order to carry out a policy of your making, which is probably more to your advantage than theirs. So it's a psychological technique, and it is used quite frequently at different levels of society. But when it comes to war and major things like that, it is a really totally disastrous thing. And it is, it's augmented by the ability to keep people with their, with their hands to the grindstone in order to keep them from really exploring out into the world of genuine culture and knowledge. They don't become sufficiently informed to understand and to defend themselves against this type of exploitation, which is a tragedy.
Yeah, that exploitation, of course, again, is this excess redundant labor that the economy doesn't really require. So a bunch of make jobs, make work policies.
Sure.
It's not just being on welfare that's controlling of the individual. It's being in the work state, a kind of metropolis style forced work state where work doesn't necessarily appear to be forced labor, but behind the scenes it actually is, or at least it's redundant labor. But at any rate, both are forms of government dependency and slavery or enslavement to the system, not just being on welfare and food stamps. Contrary to conservative credo, they don't realize the whole picture. As you often said, Wallace, the Achilles heel of the conservative movement is their lack of understanding of economics. But without getting into that, let's hear, speaking of people taking advantage and extorting people for the purpose of advancing their own power and undermining and swindling people, we have Justin Trudeau, the so-called leader of Canada from the Liberal Party. And here is a provincial member of parliament. We're going to play this audio clip now. Let's cue that up. And his name is Randy Hillier from the Frontenac Kingston area in Ontario. And that, I believe, is east of Toronto, if I'm not mistaken. But at any rate, here's Randy Hillier speaking out against a particular aspect, his understanding that Justin Trudeau, with the contrivance or compliance of the Ontarian leaders, may be considering detainment facilities across Canada, not only for people that are supposedly sick with COVID, not only for quarantining people like that, but also for quarantining refuseniks and dissidents, according to what Hillier believes may be the case. Here's Randy Hillier.
Tomorrow, on Wednesday, October 21st, I will be challenging and testing Ontario's COVID laws. I will not be protesting. I will be gathering with friends. Here is my question in the Ontario legislature today, where I question and challenge the government. Make sure to share, like, and follow my videos.
Member for Lanark, Frontenac, Kingston.
Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Never in our long history have we seen such abuse and violations of our Constitution, our fundamental freedoms, and our rights. As the Premier spouts that we're all on the brink, the Minister of Long-Term Care refers to COVID as comparable to a bad flu season. Along with these contradictions, however, he denies people the freedom of mobility, our freedom of assembly, and our freedom to be with loved ones. But his laws are unconstitutional, and they will be tested. Speaker, tomorrow I will host and gather with more than 25 friends, an offence under these authoritarian laws. Speaker, my question is the Premier...
I caution the member on his language.
Is the Premier prepared to violate our constitutional rights to defend this fear-mongering agenda?
Government House Leader to reply.
Well, of course not, Mr. Speaker. We're doing no such thing. And I can appreciate that the member opposite has a different view on the best ways in which we should, as a province and as an assembly, be tackling the COVID-19 outbreak that has taken the lives of too many Ontarians, Mr. Speaker. But as much as I respect the honourable member's ability to get up and ask questions that are important to he and his community, I can say very clearly to the member opposite that we will not stop doing all that we can to make sure that the people of the province of Ontario are safe, that we have the absolute best results when it comes to COVID-19. We have all been working very, very hard together. In fact, for vast majority of this outbreak, we have worked with unanimous consent of all members of this legislature, including the member opposite, who approved almost all of the measures that we have brought forward. So I say very clearly to the member, I respect your opinions. I disagree with them, and we will continue to work very hard to make sure the people of the province of Ontario remain safe.
Getting to the Premier, and just for the record, since May, I have opposed many of these unconstitutional measures, and I'm on the record for doing that. I'll be testing this law at 10:30 tomorrow morning in Queen's Park, directly north of the Assembly. We'll be social, but we won't be masked. We'll be greeting people. If the Premier believes his laws are valid and not just scare tactics, he can throw the book at me tomorrow. Have Toronto Bylaw, Toronto Police, come and charge me as the host and the organizer. The law must be tested in our courts, but I have the doubt that he has the courage to defend it. Speaker,
question.
The Premier. Will the Premier defend our Constitution, or will he violate my rights? From here, it looks like he's just being a political yahoo.
I'm going to ask the member to withdraw the unparliamentary comment.
Withdraw.
Speaker, I think the quality of the question really speaks for itself. There has been a number of protests that have occurred during COVID-19 on a number of issues that have been very, very important to the people of the province of Ontario. We have not, of course, outlawed this behaviour. At the same time, Mr. Speaker, it is our responsibility as a government, as legislators, to make sure that we do all that we can to keep the people of the province of Ontario safe. We have all taken that responsibility very, very seriously, Mr. Speaker, on both sides of the House. We may disagree on how we get there, but overwhelmingly, that's what we have all been working towards. Now, I respect the opinions of the member opposite. I completely disagree with what he is doing tomorrow. I do not believe it to be in the best interest of the people he will be protesting with. But it is our job to make sure that people are safe, and I hope the member opposite will do all that he can tomorrow to make sure that the people he is with are safe.
And that would appear to be that entire video. I'm going to apologize slightly. There evidently are two videos of Hillier, and that is one of two, and it was not the one that I indicated. Although I'm glad that we played that one, Wallace, it one I haven't even heard before. There's another one where Randy Hillier, and I wrote about this, speaks of a RFP document that he got a hold of that says, quote, in September, the federal government hosted a call for expressions of interest for contractors to supply, provide, and manage quarantine isolation camps throughout every province and every territory in Canada. These quarantine isolation camps are not, however, limited to people with COVID, but will provide a wide latitude for many people to be detained, quote, end quote. That is what's in the other video. And I'm just now aware that there are two videos whose introductions were very similar, but whose overall content differed. But what I'm quoting now is from the other video that we didn't hear. And what's interesting, Wallace, we got just a couple minutes, but this is classic of what happens in a monopoly of credit system. We have a monopoly of science that has one narrative. There are many, many other views on COVID where going out and having a rally with a member of parliament there in Ontario without masks would not pose any health threat whatsoever. But we're all prodded and coerced into obeying only one COVID narrative, and that is of the centralized medical cartel, their narrative and only their narrative, only their view of the science. And this is the scientific dictatorship that grows out of the money dictatorship. Your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you this, Mark. I think there are a lot of doctors who are shaking in their boots. They're very, very unhappy and very insecure and frightened because they don't know what consequences could be to them and their careers if they become too outspoken about their doubts and their hesitations about these things. Now, we have a doctor who has written, he's 30 or 40 years in BC established, and he has written to the minister of, the health officer of the province. And he has written what I consider to be an absolutely devastating set of questions that she should be willing to discuss and answer before the general public, before but you see, she's not elected. So she's not in a position where she can even be voted out in that sense. And I think that I understand there are about 300 or 400 doctors in Europe who have actually initiated an enormous multi-billion dollar lawsuit.
Right. That's right.
The thing of it is, the people who have big egos and who are inclined to think that they're entitled by the virtue of their supposed superior intelligence, they think that they're ordained to control other people's behavior. These people are of a particular mindset, and they do not just voluntarily give up those aspirations. They feed on their desire to control. And it's not by any means just a desire to help people. It's very largely their overdeveloped egos. And there's an old expression, and I think it is really, really profound. Experts were meant to be on tap, not on top.
Yeah.
In other words, the consumers should be free to say, I like your product, or I don't like your product. I'm accepting your product, I'm rejecting it. Nature of a free society.
Or I like your COVID narrative, or I don't accept your COVID narrative. And again, you can hear those people responding to Hillier, putting safety over freedom as if freedom and safety are polar opposites, when in fact, freedom and safety are synonymous. Safety lies in freedom.
That's a devious ploy that these people use. They know that they can psychologically coerce or bully people that way.
Well, Wallace, I want to thank you for being on the show. An hour goes by quick on radio, and I hope all is well up there in Alberta, Canada. And a good read on this, look it up, ladies and gentlemen, is Social Credit Economics by Oliver Haydorn. You can also go to socred.org, S-O-C-R-E-D, socred.org. And you can read up, this isn't monopoly capitalism, and it certainly is not socialism. It's something you need to learn about more. And Wallace, thanks again.
All right, Mark, I'm very pleased to be with you and to discuss what we call economic and political realism.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.